And I'll write that term on the board so you can fathom it and digest it. So actually, this term came into being first in Dutch, and then was quickly adapted in the United States in the English language. But I won't get into that term yet. This session is titled, What is Music? Cross-Cultural Perspectives. Now, I imagine with a question like that, we could go on for the next couple centuries sitting here talking about what is music. It's a broad topic, but thinking that I really only have about one session here at Holden to discuss my feelings about what I've learned in the past year at my program at University of Washington, I felt to ask an open-ended question, and I really hope to get some responses from you, and we can make this more of like a coffee table discussion of sorts. And with a broad topic like that, no tangent is a tangent in where we go with things. So what I'd like to do is first ask the question, what is music? Okay? And you tell me, you give me a definition, anybody, or any ideas or terms that you would, what are the components of music? What does music do or such? Anyone?
Joyful noise.
Joyful noise?
It's expression of emotions.
Uh-huh. Music has three components. It has rhythm, melody, and harmony.
Okay, rhythm. Anybody else? What are some ideas of what music is? Is it something that you not think too often? Is it not something that you would want to really even think about? Because music, the purpose of music is beyond thinking in a way. It's very irrational process, so to speak, right?
The most abstract emotional experience that we have.
Abstract emotional, yeah. Okay. Now what I'd like to do is read you some definitions out of some dictionaries as to what music is. Okay? And probably you'll agree with them for the most part. Here's one definition of music from the compact edition of the Oxford English Dictionary, 1979. These are all dictionaries you can get here at our library. In fact, almost all my materials are taken from our library here. Because I wasn't exactly expecting to do a lecture like this, but I just thought, wow, it'd be great. But
yeah.
Here's one definition. That one of the fine arts, which is concerned with the combination of sounds, with a view to beauty of form and the expression of emotion, also the science of the laws or principles, that is melody, harmony, rhythm, etc. There's more there. By which this art is regulated. And it says further in print, considered as an art. Okay, so let's write some more of these ideas down. An art. Music has two distinct branches, the art of the composer and that of the executant. So you have a composer and really a performer, right? Let's see what I hear. The word is often used with special reference to the executive branch and to instrumental execution rather than vocal. That's when we think of music, we're often thinking of musical instruments as opposed to singing. Read you just two more definitions. This is from the Random House Dictionary of the English Language, 1983. Music, an art of sound in time which expresses ideas and emotions in significant forms through the elements of rhythm, melody, harmony, and color. So there's another element there, color. That is the sound of something. Like this is one kind of color. That's the the, or it's also called timbre from the French. Often when we refer to music, sometimes we refer to the actual printed page, you know, in the hymnal, for instance. Is that music on the page? Or is music really what we end up singing? Music is used in a very vague sense, okay? Now, let me just talk more about the origin of the term music. Music was originally taken from the Greek idea. Various Greek philosophers made up this idea called music, okay? And it actually refers to the art or technique of the muses. I'm getting this from the Harvard Dictionary of Music. And since that time, in Western philosophical traditions and in language, we've had this term called music. Now, what's peculiar about these ideas of music? I mean, probably you won't be able to get what I'm thinking in my head, but possibly. All these definitions that I just said, and these ideas, and I'll give you a little hint, culturally speaking.
They're all fairly modern.
They're
words, not sounds.
Yeah, that's a good point. Words, not sounds.
Communication, ways of communicating.
That's from a Western tradition, I think.
Precisely. Well, this is, we our experience is the Western experience. And so when we say that music has these components or that music is art, when we go and we try and listen to other musics from other cultures and we have this framework in our mind, how well does that work, is the question. To what extent can we even apply these ideas to non-Western cultures and to their music? I think you can apply it to a certain extent, and you have to, because that's the way we speak English, we think English, you know. Perhaps the best way to understand music from the Ituri forest of the Mbuti people is to speak their language and to hang out with them for a few years. Maybe that's the way you'll truly understand their music. But so what I ask you in the sense tonight is to sort of recognize these as, is this coming from our tradition, our idea and conception of music, that we have music specialization, right? There's a musician over there. I'm not a musician. I don't do music at all. In other cultures, there isn't really this differentiation at all. You know, and in fact, there are many cultures that don't even use the term music. They don't have a translatable term in their language called music. So these are some of the ideas that I wanted to bring up. Now, I'll give you some examples right off the bat about the idea that music is not, in a sense, a cross-cultural phenomenon if people don't consider what they do as music, even though they're making sounds. This may seem like a real weird idea, but we think it's music. Maybe they think it's charming the gods.
Ritual.
Right. Very good. Ritual. So how do we go about talking about music from other cultures then if we're not going to talk about it, or at least not always talk about it strictly in a Western framework? Are we going to put out a staff and listen to it? Okay. I hear an E going to the G, and I hear it going to an F sharp. Okay, now we can get the meaning of the Anamomo people from Brazil by looking at their music here. It's going up. You really can't do it. In fact, in many ways, you have to dispense of the idea of analyzing just the sounds. You have to analyze where the sounds are coming from, what's behind the sounds, so to speak. meaning? Yeah, well, not only meaning, but it's cultural configuration or its cultural meanings. So that means you need to learn some of their terms that they in their language. And so essentially what you're doing is an anthropological endeavor. What you're doing, you're studying culture. You're not studying music per se. And in that, this music does not exist, it's not isolated in one component. It's connected to the food they're eating. I'd say Bach is definitely connected to the food we eat, perhaps. So I don't know. Maybe you can think of something like that. But so if we sort of dispense of this, then that means we need to understand the cultural context upon which we hear these sounds. So I suggest, and this is not my definition of music, but here's an idea of music. Music being this thing that we call music being humanly organized sound, or as he inverses, this ethnomusicologist inverses the definition being soundly organized humanity. But aside from this, so if we think music instead to be humanly organized sound, now, still, the emphasis is on the sound. You know, we're hearing sounds. But it gets beyond the Greek term here. You know, it gets beyond the specific Western idea that, okay, we have a music performer here, and we have a composer here. We have the three elements, rhythm, melody, and harmony. When I play my pipe here, my plumbing pipe, I'm not really thinking I'm going to play a melody, you see. In fact, I don't think they're thinking that they're playing melodies either when they play this in Aboriginal Australia. Yeah. Well, I'll get to this a little later. That's fine. It's this was made in Holden, so I'm not too worried. It'll be dismantled when I leave, actually.
Couldn't we say that the sound of whales is music too?
Sure. It depends on how far you want to build your own definition. I don't know exactly what this is, but this is this thing that we listen to that has sort of this acoustical phenomena. This is what I sort of view what music is, in a sense. And so sometimes when I'm in Seattle and I hear the street sweepers with their blowers blowing out the trash, I sing along with it, and this is music to me. This may seem like an odd idea, but this has sort of been my own life journey from viewing only Led Zeppelin and various other rock groups as being music and everything else being nothing else, you know, to hearing street sweepers on this.
There's a response to anything that's music of some kind. Your response to that is called music.
Yeah.
Well, what's noise to one person might be music to somebody else. Or
true.
Vice versa.
Yeah. Right. Well, just to give you one example, in West Africa, a certain ethnomusicologist named Charles Kyle, actually this part up here, not really North Africa where Morocco is and such, but more in this area along this way. He went all the way through searching in vain for a term called music, a translatable term. And they didn't have such a thing. They didn't separate music from dance, for instance. They just couldn't sit there going, do 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 do. I mean, I can't even sit still and go do do do. They have to be dancing do 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 do. So they don't have a separate term in many ways for dance and music, you see. And the two are much more connected. Another example. And of course, I'm being very vague. I'm just running through whole textbooks and my vagueness in generality, but I can do that because tonight's session is called What is Music? But, in the Middle East, for instance, they differentiate, they do have a concept called music, okay? And it's actually adopted because of Western influence. In fact, I think everywhere in the whole world now, they have a concept called music because of Western influence and Western economic power and us sending our Michael Jackson to Japan or sending Michael Jackson to the rainforest. But they have a concept called music. Then they have a concept called song. Well, I mean, I'm translating these terms. Then they have something called tajweed. So they have one, two, like three basic ideas. Tajweed is recitation of the Quran. The Quran is the holy book of Islam. And they don't consider this music. And it's specifically for a historical, cultural reason that they do not consider this music, because traditionally they, in Islam, music has been something that only low social status and other values have been applied to people who perform music and such. So when a person is singing the Quran, they do not call that music, for in part because of that reason. Song is different from music because it has text. This is as important or more important in singing. Music to them is just instruments. It's quite literally the sound. There's no text at all. So there's another example where, yeah, they might have something of an idea of music, but even though these involve sound, it's not music, in a sense. Now, I would like to turn to one other brief idea here, and I would like to have someone help me out here, if you could. I'll get something out of the Bible here, and too bad I don't have our Bible study professor here for these past couple of weeks. She was going to help me out with this. This was a very last-ditch idea, very last-moment idea. I'll have you read the thing as well. Just to show you that this not only extends this concept of music for us, it not only extends to differences between cultures in our contemporary period, but also historically, and even in the Bible. So I'll read to you from the New Revised Standard Version, a translation of out of 1 Samuel 19, verse 9. It says, "Then an evil spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand while David was playing music." They use the term music here. Now, could you read the same verse, chapter 19, verse 9?
"Then an evil spirit from the Lord came upon Saul, and he sat in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing with the lyre."
Okay, now, Ron, if I could have you read that same verse. Okay, I'm sorry, this was Revised Standard Version, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, this is King James.
King James. "And an evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul, as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand."
Played with his hand. So we have someone playing music, someone playing a lyre, and someone playing with his hand. So, I mean, this is very interesting. And just briefly, and this is especially just a speculation on my part, and you really have to take this with a grain of salt the size of koinonia, but... perhaps they didn't even have a concept of music, the Hebrews did, you know. And that's what Esther was thinking. Music thus is tied to many more things other than just a performance. It's tied to life cycle events, like ritual. you have everyone involved. Even if you have specialists, people aren't thinking that they're listening to music. They're involved in a ritual, a religious ritual. It's like when we go to chapel and someone performs. Yes, we do clap probably often, but if you can remember, very often other people objected to clapping because this is a praise to the Lord, right? This is another idea that this is not so much music as it is being an act of praise, perhaps, and an act of worship. So, ritual is one example of that, and that's a very strong example in non-Western cultures. Another one is realization of myth as well. I'm trying to think. I'll go ahead and play some music right now. This is from East Africa. Say this is music. I mean, it has sounds to it. People are singing. Some harps are playing. People making animal noises there. Okay. I question though the idea that what they're thinking right now is that they're performing or that they are doing music. What they're doing is sort of a ritual. In fact, this is a curing ritual. No, a soothing song, I'm sorry. For a child who's having trouble going to sleep. Yeah, it sounds funny because they're making noise. But a child scared of the forest. And so what you heard was animal sounds being brought in. You heard a masking voice instead of singing normally. You sort of heard a in there as well. So this is actually very sophisticated if you want to analyze the sound element of it. But it's also inseparable from its cultural context, its purpose, its function. Now, I will now turn to more analysis of terms. This is what I study. Probably most of you were here when I was just, I'm a MA student in ethnomusicology at the University of Washington, and this is a really strange term, in my opinion. I don't really like it all that much. This kind of denotes ethnic, and this is what the study of music per se. Actually, there's a whole branch, and this is the dominant academic institution in music departments is musicology, which is what I would call more the study of Western music. Although this is technically the study of music. And actually, I would agree with you because music is a Western idea, so it is the study of music, but it's the study of Western music. Terminology gets difficult here, but the ethno tag was tagged on because it sort of denoted that we study the music from these other peoples, you know, the non-Westerns, the third world folks. And as you can see, there's a connection with ethnic. But in my opinion, Bach is as ethnic as the Wagogo people who we just heard. His music was as embedded in cultural implications and context as is the Wagogo people. Yet we sort of divorce this out of its cultural context and we get our own meaning from it. which is not the meaning perhaps he had at all, maybe not, during his time. And so, what really, question?
Well, but one of the differences is that Bach was working in an ethnic culture in a way that was far more extensive. I mean, the Wagogo intentions are far more embedded in a certain cultural situation. And presumably when that group moves away from the jungle, then that music will simply not exist anymore. They did not do this for the purpose of performing it and perpetuating it. Bach was intending that from the very beginning.
Okay, yeah, but those are Western ideas of writing it down.
But it's still a practical fact that the Wagogo chants that are involved now are much more limited in scope, intentionally so, than Bach's was. I mean, he never intended it to be only heard by people who, ate beer and sauerkraut. You know, that it was never intended from the first to be limited in the same way that the Wagogo chant is.
So you're saying their intentions are limited in comparison to Bach?
Yeah. I mean, there was a certain intention to be, depending on what you mean by ethnic. I mean, that the Wagogo, for instance, did not intend this chant to be pan-African. It was limited to a certain social group, whereas Bach did intend this to be at least pan-European.
Really? I don't know. I don't know the background of that. I can't really comment on that. And so I don't know how to respond to you. But my concept here is not so much of preservation or oral culture versus written culture.
Right.
The idea here is that each of these is equally embedded in this concept called culture, in that really I think the more profound meaning is found in analyzing what this sound stuff is for these people. What
when the Wagogo people do they ever perform, or well, not perform, but does a sound come out like that the same again? I mean, when they try to put a kid to bed the next night, does it come out exactly the same, or do they just, freely give all these different expressions?
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Are they just sort of out there doing anything? And absolutely not.
There's certain sounds that all of them aren't coming out.
They have a definite tradition and a definite way of doing things, but here's the interesting thing is that the composer, there's not a distinction made between composer and performer. Everyone is the performer. Imagine all of us here, and we have a child that needs to go to sleep, and we start singing a soothing song. We don't have such a breakdown between a specialist and a non-specialist in other cultures. And see, these are questions that ethnomusicology asks, and musicology is asking this more and more now, I would say. But these are questions drawn out of another discipline called anthropology. And so we ask anthropological questions as to what this music means, as opposed to just more limited musicological approach, which might be historical or analysis of sounds, the theory or the acoustical element. So we ask various questions like, how does music function in a culture? What are the uses of it? I know when I'm in Seattle downtown, I hear, I know that sort of a function for me of, okay, that they are, that it's a statement, music is being used to say, hey, look at me, or who I am. Or the same thing is with any heavy metal rock music you hear coming out of a big built-up car in the suburbs. It's an ego statement, in my opinion. That's a function of music that's closer to home to us. But that song we just heard, the Wagogo example, was a soothing song, the function being to put this child to sleep. But it's also a community realization as well. It gets a lot deeper than that. Social structure, for instance, and I'll play an example right now. This is from the Mbuti people of the Ituri Forest. This is in the northeast Congo of Africa. Voices actually.
They're singing in parts,
yeah, it's interesting, but not the same kind of parts, soprano, bass, tenor, alto, or however, I didn't say it the right way, but they're doing a technique called hocketing. No, that's my way. You got me on that one, but it's interesting. This is an example where you can analyze the sound structure and see how it relates to the social structure. What you have is, let's say, person number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And this can go up to person number 16, actually. But this person will sing a tone here, then this person will sing another tone here, and this person might sing a little different tone there, and a little different tone simultaneously, and then that person's there, and another. Then at the same time, you have one person coming a little earlier, and then once again corresponding there, and then a little different tone right there. So they are sort of singing a syncopated rhythm, sometimes coordinating with them and sometimes not. And what's very fascinating here is that they each have an individual part that's very important, but at the same time, they have to be cognizant of each other. They have to be very aware and working with each other. They're not, you don't have the solos going off and wild while other people are hanging back and maybe playing a bass line or such. This is all equally structured in a sense. And this more or less structures their concept in their own practices of their society. I don't know if you've learned much about the Mbuti people, but they're known as quite an egalitarian society. And this is reflected in their music structure, in a way. And so thus, their individuality is affirmed, but at the same time, they are concerned about wholeness, about their whole community. And it's quite complex, because you get some melodies are thus realized through two or three people. Instead of one person singing a melody, three people sing it. So, like, for instance, we can sing Mary Had a Little Lamb. I would go, Mary had a little lamb, Mary. And they would go on and on, but you have multiple lines of this happening. In fact, you have numerous Mary Had a Little Lambs going all along with 16 people singing. I mean, this is complex. This is interesting, but the idea also is that it relates to their own culture, to their way of life.
Can I offer an example that's quite different than that?
But sure.
I mean, in the same vein. Northwestern California, where I lived and worked with Indian people, the cultures there were very egalitarian. Would not be a term I would use to describe them, but they were very strongly based on families and extended large family groups and villages, village areas, so that and certain people were designated as singers, particularly men. That was a particular vocation of men. And if a man had a song, was given a song, perhaps handed down, willed to him by a relative or a father or an uncle, then he could will that. That was his song. You didn't use that song, you didn't use it publicly, because that was like violating a copyright sort, a will. And that song was passed on down to whomever, you know, that person chose, maybe a promising young singer or maybe a member of his extended family in some way. But it was, he had, in a sense, individual ownership rights for that. And so at some of the ceremonial dances, then men, the songs that were sung at a healing dance, for instance, if the healing, the person who was to be healed was a young child, which was often the case these days, then the first singer would probably be a member somehow of that child's family or extended family who would sing a song that comes from that family line. So that sense of the music being tied to the social structure, and in this case the social structure being geared really closely to families, what family you came from and what village area.
That same thing is true of the Indian tribe of the Pacific Northwest.
Excellent example of how culture is all important, really, in understanding or getting a real deep meaning of what music is, in my opinion. What if we were to, let's say, record some of those songs and then try to write them out on staff notation and analyze how the melody works or something? What does that really tell us, in a sense? In fact, we can really dispose of that in many ways and listen to what the people have to say and how their life is really reflected in their music.
Question. Somebody asked earlier, whose word was a hocket? But we had hocketing in Western music up until the 14th century, or something. Hocket is an English word from that period, used to describe the very technique that he had up there, which was, there was English music of the period that had hocket in it, Burgundian music, Flemish music. It was a really common technique, and it only disappeared because vocal parts in Western music started differentiating between high, medium, and low. And when that started happening, then each was given a voice line within its own compass. But until that time, hocketing was a typical feature of Western music.
And yeah, that's a very good point. And one would not naturally make the argument then, perhaps, that, oh, those people are still in the 14th century. You know, musically speaking.
There's something that sounds very much like that. I don't know if it'd be termed the same thing that I've heard, like the, in the Javanese and Indonesia, the Ramayana monkey chants. Mm-hmm. They sound very like, except they get a lot more people involved.
Yeah, have you been to Bali to hear it? Yeah, it's fascinating. And I think it's a wonderful musical
it's quite
event.
It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, and they do actually use that technique of hocketing, but it's interesting, not to downgrade it at all or anything of that sort, but actually the origins of that ritual are because of Western tourism. they invented it because of Westerners really loved this sort of exotic ideas. And so in some sense, that's the meaning behind the Ketjak or the Ramayana monkey chant. I love it, and yeah. I mean, I have to admit, I mean, that was one of the first things I ever encountered when I started listening to non-Western music. And I still listen to it, and if I have a car, if I ever own one, and then have big speakers, I'll have the Ramayana monkey chant. But I'd like to get to some other terms that we often use and probably often used without thinking about too much. And let's start thinking about them now. I would like to have some help here. Okay, we have folk music, right? We have popular music, classical music, or art music. What other?
Country.
Okay, that might come under where? Folk music or?
Well, they usually separate folk music from country western. The style is usually different, although it can kind of meld together, but the styles are somewhat different.
Gospel?
Well, you had jazz of years ago.
Right. Now, these are more specific terms, in my opinion. They're more stylistic terms. This is a broader style, stylistic term. Folk music can accompany, well, like what Bob Dylan sings, or Joan Baez. But it also could possibly, maybe some other kinds of music not as related, like bluegrass, right? What styles of music would you call popular music?
Ballad. That used to be popular. Popular.
Right. Big band. Double B.
Well, during his heyday, you could put Bob Dylan in popular music too.
Yeah.
Crossover guy. That's the word.
Where would you put Dixie in?
During his day.
Stephen Foster, where does he go?
Yeah, it gets hard because ultimately these terms are meaningless, but we often use them. Classical music, or what is classical music?
Beethoven.
Brahms.
Yeah.
There we go. The three B's.
Generally, listen, classical music also is all broken. Like you have the Baroque, and you have Romantic, and you have.
Contemporary,
and you have all the breakdown, and a lot of people list them as classical, but when you read a musician writing about it, generally they break them down into these various compartments. So it depends on who's talking about it and how they feel about it.
Right. Now, do we use this term in referring to other cultures?
Yes.
We most certainly do. In fact, this is most often the term we use when we refer to other cultures. They're folk music. And it's very interesting that other cultures don't have a classical music in our minds, in a sense. But do they really? Some do. Like what would be an example?
The Oriental music is quite classical, right? For them.
Uh-huh.
Not classical.
Right. But it's interesting, though, that you can see a music, an album of, let's say, Ravi Shankar very early on, Ravi Shankar is a famous classical Indian sitarist. And I think I remember seeing one album that said folk music of India. But to him, he's a classical musician. You know, and so it's interesting that, in a sense, we do have a hierarchy in our heads, but I will sort of avoid all that discussion. So what are some of the distinctive features of then folk music? Usually we think acoustic, right?
Generally a very personal story.
Uh-huh.
Simpler.
Good.
Amateur.
Maybe in someone's garage or in a parking lot, just people sitting down and playing, or a lot of music we hear, right? We consider that folk music.
Ethnic.
How about popular music?
Repetitious.
What sells?
Okay, let's take the example rock, okay? Rock music.
Commercial,
mass mediated, right? On cassettes. I often think a primary component of that is technology.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting. When I hear Vivaldi's Four Seasons, I think I'm hearing pop music, in my opinion. I mean, it's mass mediated. It's everyone hears it. This may seem odd, an odd idea, but it probably, there's not one person in the United States who has access to a CD player who probably hasn't had Vivaldi's Four Seasons coming out of that or something, you know. I'm exaggerating a bit, I guess. So thus, these are very interchangeable terms. And I think that when you listen to other cultures, that you can, let's say, we will use these terms. You can apply these terms to other cultures as well. And that it's not all just folk music.
But the criteria you use to apply them, you have to be inside that culture in order to, you know,
understand it.
Mariachi.
I would like to now play for you some of that humanly organized sound, that music stuff, from a particular area that I'm more familiar with, that I've been studying for the past year. And I would call this classical music. In fact, many folks there call it classical music. But they hear a world of difference. First example will be from Afghanistan. Next will be from Kashmir. And next will be from more generally South India. Now, here's another interesting idea, is that I'm using geographical names for these terms. Why aren't I using the names of the performers themselves? That we often identify our own classical musicians, for instance, as Bach and Beethoven. We don't think, okay, I'm going to hear some German music now and flip on the cantata or something of that sort. Whereas when we go to other non-Western cultures and try and think of their music, we're thinking of whole groups, maybe whole geographic areas, Africa. There's so much diversity in Africa, I don't know what African music is. In a way, you know, it's a very odd concept to me. I'll go ahead and play someone named Muhammad Omar. Not just sort of flailing away and playing any old notes. This is years of practice and learning. The instrument is called a rabab. A rabab, this is actually related to our Western guitar. You can imagine, most of our instruments come from the Arab world. All our drums do, and a lot of our other instruments as well. What you have, I forget exactly what the instrument was, but there's an instrument called the oud in the Middle East, and that's directly related to the rabab. The oud became the lute. The lute became more like the tar. This is over-civilization for sure. But it's very interesting that very distantly related. This music is related to our guitar. But he's playing in a modal system, a series of melodies and scales. And there's certain ways you can go about the scales. I really don't want to get too much into the theory of the music, because perhaps people who've had musical training can more understand me, but the idea is that this is a complex art form, which takes years to learn. And these three are related. I can play examples where they might all sound the same to some person, but they're all very different. In fact, he would consider his music. It's not really Afghanistan music. I play my music, you know? He would identify himself as Mohammad Amar's music, not as Afghani music. Now the next example I will play is from Kashmir. This is the Santur. It's actually the ancestor of our hammer dulcimer. Makes me look like I don't even know what this is. But aside from that, this is the instrument I played at the concert the other day. This is called the Santur. This actually went to Europe through Arab contact, I imagine, but this was originally from the Persian area, and it went to Kashmir. Going on as well, whole system of rhythm that I was explaining the other night, and also a whole system of melody as well. And once again, he would look at himself, this is Shiv Kumar Sharma's music. It's not Indian music per se. He would, on a broader level, he would look at it that way, but this is his personal style. This is what he does. I would like it because it sounds a lot like Western music. One final example I'd like to play is from South India. This is a violin. A modal melody. They have thousands of modal systems called ragas, and this applies to North Indian music too. And this is meant to be played at midnight, and this when I listen to it, but a lot of performers don't recognize that as well. There's whole ornaments and so many delicacies and so many subtleties that he's doing it right there that are very delicate that perhaps we wouldn't hear. But once again, I just want to express that this is there's a lot to this music. It's specialized and such. He's a performer that has mastered North Indian classical music, South Indian classical music, and European Western music as well on his violin. He's a preeminent musician. So I don't really think of this as Karnataka. It's not South Indian music. This is, to me, L. Subramaniam playing violin. So what essentially this is a what I would call a de-otherization, making them less of this mystery and more as human beings, as being personal, being very personal. And more, and I think probably ought to end soon. I don't know if you had any questions.
I hope you leave enough time so you can play your horn. Or
I don't know if you, okay, I can do that at the very end as you're walking out. But, yeah.
For these three things, do these people both write? I mean, is there a concept of writing this music and then playing the, and then the composer is also the performer of it? Or is somebody else write it?
No, the performer is the composer, which is very interesting. They don't have a split, in a sense, between, okay, someone's going to write it, then you read it. It's all realized, the composition is realized at the very moment that they are performing.
Would you call it improvisatory, or is it too complex to call it that?
You can call it improvisatory, but they have a whole structure in their head. Yeah, I would call it improvisation, but it's a little more involved than that. I don't know, I haven't really quite thought that one through yet.
Well, jazz musicians in the U.S., you know, we talk about improvisation there, but there also is an underlying structure, and I mean, there's the given chord changes, and some people, I mean, you can sit in and with a group, and you know what people are going to do, and yet it's also being composed and as it's happening, in a sense. There may be an underlying melody, but everything that's done with it is happening right then. I don't know if that's similar to what you're about this or not.
Very much so.
I couldn't play the violin at all. How can they tell the difference between my playing and his? I mean, what if he's improvising and changing all the time, is there a standard so I can say that Subramaniam is actually a better player now than he was 5 years ago playing the same raga?
Yeah.
There are standards. I mean,
definitely.
I of course would not know them because that's the first time I've ever heard it. But
right.
There are standards so people can say you're playing better now than you used to.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Good point.
I was curious about your comment that our musical instruments came from, you say, the Middle East?
Well, I wouldn't say they came from, but the ideas evolved and diffused to the West.
Because in China, they have the direct counterparts to hammered dulcimer and lute and so forth, some of which, I forget which, they tell us have thousands of years of history there.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there isn't something a little more universal, perhaps, than a given origin spreading.
Oh, that the idea was more, it popped up, parallel evolution of sorts.
Yeah.
Some of this is true with drums, perhaps, and with flutes.
1500 BC, elaborate bronze drums in the museum.
Right. But there is definite evidence of culture contact, historical and archaeological evidence that suggests very much so that these instruments were spread out as opposed to just ideas brought up by different cultures at the same time. Question?
Has the theory of color in music ever been, has it been changed? Like 60 years ago, we were taught the color wheel was divided into woods, reeds, flutes, and strings, and so forth.
Mm.
And the theory of that was that all sound is vibration, and light is vibration, and if the vibrations, just take for example a reed, that could be brought up to a certain degree, you get a number of high vibrations, it would give off a red color. And the strings would give off a yellow color, and the flutes blue, and so forth, and that was a color wheel. And when you said a piece of music was colorful, well, it was supposed to balance all that. Have you heard anything in recent years? Have they proven that theory? That was theory at that time.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with this theory at all. Of course, there's a lot I'm not familiar with.
I don't know
how
it could have been proven, but where it originated, but that's what they taught us some 60 years ago.
Wow,
a piece of music was colorful that was supposed to represent all these colors.
Wow, yeah, that's neat. Yeah, I don't know if there are any other questions. Yeah.
Well, Bruce, just when you were talking about this being improvisatory, to go back to the example of Bach that you raised earlier, Bach as an organist would have a theme based on, you know, the well-tempered system or something in his head. He would sit down at his organ on a Sunday morning. without any written music in front of him, and he'd improvise a toccata or something like that. And then afterward, because there were printing presses available, because there was notation available, and Bach could make...